The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. You must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Happy holidays. Welcome to the BS Report. Just wanted to give a quick shout-out to all the listeners who subscribed to the iTunes podcast, as I requested as my free holiday gift in Friday's column. Very nice of you. Shot us up the iTunes rankings. And just to make this clear, I don't get any bonuses for being in the top 10 or the top 25, top 5. Doesn't matter. I'm just over-competitive. It just bothers me that all these NPR shows are ahead of mine in terms of the downloaded podcast. So if you like this show, if you like me, if you care about me, just subscribe to the podcast. It'll take like 1 second. And then I get to go bump up those rankings, and I get to look and see, oh, I'm number 4 today. I'm number 3. I get to feel good about myself. I don't ask for much. Everything I do is free for you guys. So, yeah, that's my plea. Anyway, we have two holiday podcasts this week. This is the first one. We do the lines with Cousin Sal. We have a star from the Rocky series, and I'm not going to divulge who, but we have a star from the Rocky series. And that will be at around the 35-minute mark of this podcast, I'm guessing. We're going to have a little cameo from Dickie Barrett of the Mighty Mighty Bosstones, who is performing a bunch of holiday shows back east. And then at the tail end, my daughter is going to sing a Hanukkah song. So this is an action-packed podcast. All right, final week of the NFL season. As always, our friend Cousin Sal is going to join us to pick the Lions. He picks the Lions first. I pick them later. We'll see who does better. And Sal, coincidentally, almost fortuitously, as I was waiting for you to call, I saw on my desk, for whatever reason, I guess my wife was shuffling papers, it's our pick-by-pick fantasy draft from September.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Here were your top 8 picks. Westbrook.
Yeah.
Braylon Edwards. Plaxico Burress. Wes Welker. Lawrence Maroney. Derek Anderson. Lindell White. Tony Gonzalez. Eli Manning. Also, Jerry Porter. And then Matt Forte, randomly, in the 12th round.
Yeah. That's a pretty good top 4, although I will never take any of them again except for Westbrook maybe,
here's the team that won our league, the Jennies.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Terrell Owens, 9th pick overall. I'm going to say that didn't really work out.
No, that's not good.
Ryan Grant with the 12th pick.
Nope.
Andre Johnson, nice.
Yep.
Brandon Jacobs, nice.
Yeah.
Jericho Cotchery, okay. Ernest Graham, Bernard Berrian, David Garrard, first quarterback picked by this team.
Wait, that's their first quarterback. Wow.
Yeah. Chris Cooley, Ted Ginn, Ahmad Bradshaw, Jake Delhomme, Packers D, Nick Folk, Watson, Ingram, Garcia, Brandon Jackson.
Wow.
That's the team that won our league.
That makes you want to quit the whole thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, when D'Angelo Williams turns into Barry Sanders circa 1997, yeah, inexplicably for the last 5 weeks of the season, why do we even spend time doing fantasy football?
Well, I think four of the top 5 running backs and ended up the top point getting running backs, you wouldn't even consider taking the first round. Peterson was in the mix, but then it was like, it was Thomas Jones and Michael Turner and, like you said, D'Angelo Williams, and then someone else who you just wouldn't think of taking until the third round.
Especially,
I don't want the first pick next year. I don't want the first 3 picks, I don't think, next year, right?
Well, here's our first round. Tomlinson, Westbrook,
yeah,
Steven Jackson, Peterson, Adai, Brady, Moss, Marion Barber, who just murdered you in the playoffs.
My God. Yeah.
Terrell Owens, Clinton Portis. Oof.
That's lousy.
Yeah. Yeah. But, anyway. All right. So yeah,
we're in the business of picking lines. We're in the business of picking lines.
But before we do,
yeah,
the Cowboys have broken your heart so many times that we thought we'd try something interesting. We're gonna different this week. We're gonna do a time machine conversation, actually predicting what next week's podcast, what we'll be talking about after the Cowboys-Eagles game.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, this all started for you were nice enough to send me an email after the latest crushing loss saying, I've run out of ways to apologize to you for these losses.
Yeah, now. Yeah.
And I was thinking about that. I was like, yeah, you're right. I can't even say, oh, that was one of our 10 worst losses. I can't even do that anymore because it seems like every week, I don't know because if we're on national television so much or what, but it just seems like so many punch-in-the-gut losses over the last 3 to 5 years. So.
And all in different ways.
Yeah, yeah.
So here's how I think this week. Here are my top three scenarios for this week to just crush you.
Yeah.
Maybe a squib kick, like you're up four with 40 seconds left. Squib kick to not, and it bounces off two guys. They almost seem like they're going to pick it up, and then they run it 80 yards for the TD.
I like that.
That's my first choice. Romo, not, yelling at Terrell Owens, like you're down three, but you're on like the 20-yard line, minute left. Romo's yelling something at Owens, but the center snaps it off his head. Eagles run it back for a touchdown.
That I could see.
That hasn't happened yet, right?
No, not yet. Right.
And then I was thinking maybe you're down four with a minute left. Romo hits Owens. Owens is catching it. It's in his hands. He's juggling it, and he juggles it for like 11 yards and then drops it.
I like that too.
I don't remember that happening.
I like it. Well, only in my dreams. They've all happened, but because I see it. But
have you had your kicker hook like a 27-yarder to lose the game yet?
That'd be pretty good. Or his leg flies off in the middle of the play. I think maybe I'll just give my concession. Like maybe you should just say you're sorry now for the Eagles' loss, and I'll just come up with what I'll have said. And
all right, let's do that.
And then we'll play it next week. Yeah.
Sal, so we're recording this on December 23rd, and we'll play it next week. Sal, I don't know what to say. I'm running out of ways to apologize to you. I'm really sorry about what happened to the Cowboys.
Well, I appreciate it, and I'm still bewildered. I mean, it comes down to us being outplayed, outcoached, too many penalties. I mean, if you would have told me McNabb was going to throw three interceptions and Westbrook was going to fumble five times and then we'd still end up losing, I mean,
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I know it was cold, so none of our receivers wanted to go over the middle, but how does Wade Phillips not go for a two-point conversion down 28-26 with 9 seconds left? I mean, how do you kick an extra point there?
It was a mistake.
I don't know. I'm sorry. I can't even do this anymore. I'm getting depressed because I know it's going to be accurate.
I think it's good, though. See, this is what I learned how to handle every J.D. Drew at bat this year. Every time he came up, I just walked myself through all the horrible scenarios that were going to happen, and it actually helped.
It's therapeutic 5 days at a time. I do like
it. But I think when you watch the games, I think before every snap, you should just run through the worst-case scenarios, and that might switch the karma.
Let me ask you this, as a man approaching 40, is it okay to break things anymore? To me, it's extra closure on the season. It's like, all right, if I could break something in the house every year, just once a year, when I think the season's over, even though we have a chance to win now, I took my remote control and smashed it against an oscillating fan, and now I need a new one of each. So, this is, and believe me, I've gotten better over the years. This is, when is this really a problem, or is it already a problem?
No, my answer would be it's always okay to break things. And I think the remote control is the logical fall guy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got to be.
The thing you can't do is throw the remote control actually against the TV screen.
Yeah.
You have to aim it toward, like, maybe the base of the TV or the wall or whatever.
Yeah.
It's a tough one to explain to the wife.
What's that?
It's a tough one to explain to the wife.
Yeah, I know it. I know it. Yeah.
But at the same time, especially the way this – I got to say, I've never seen – a team give up consecutive 80-yard runs when they needed one stop. I mean, that was really one for the ages.
That Ken Hamlin. Two missed tackles and, like, the easiest fumble recovery you'll ever see. Well, unbelievable.
By the way, we're the first people with any sort of a forum to mention how bad he was in that game.
We are, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I mean, if you had Ken Hamlin on your fantasy team, he would have given you three touchdowns.
Exactly.
If single-handedly giving up a touchdown was a fantasy category, he was worth 18 points.
Yeah. For a safety, not having been beat on a pass play, that's the worst game you could have right there, I think.
Well, then to cap it off.
I emailed you. I said they should take him to the new stadium and open and close that retractable roof on his neck multiple times.
Well, it was funny. I was watching with my dad because my dad was here. And after, like, Well, first after the fumble, but then after the first touchdown that he screwed up when the announcers didn't call him out on it. And we were like, wow, Ken Hamlin, go to the game. Yeah. And then to cap it off, he gets stiff-armed as about like almost like a Pop Warner stiff-arm.
Right.
Like the kid who's 50 pounds heavier who just stiff-arms like the pipsqueak who's playing free safety.
Right.
Disgusting. It was embarrassing. All right, let's get to the Lens because we have no Thursday game this week.
No Thursday, no Monday. Yeah, I don't remember. I don't remember them doing this, but
the most action-packed Sunday I think I can remember.
This is going to be great. The late afternoon games are going to be spectacular. I don't know what we're going to do. But early games, to get them out of the way, St. Louis at Atlanta.
Atlanta's, are they locked into the five seed?
No, no. Atlanta could win the division in the two seed.
Oh, yeah, you're right, you're right.
They win and Carolina loses.
I'm going to say Atlanta by 12 and a half.
I said 12. It's 14 and a half, so you get that one.
All right.
It's really weird. The team won three games last year. They're giving 14 and a half points to anyone. Brings a tear to my eye. All right, let's do New England at Buffalo as an early game.
You know, this is the only one I've thought of ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
It's either 3.5 Pats or 4 Pats. And the more I'm thinking about it, I think it's 3.5.
All right, well, I'll get this one because I said 5 and it's 6.
Really?
And that's a good teaser game. Buffalo.
Buffalo good in that Denver game, though.
But that's their spoiler win, right? They can't. Well,
they already had their spoiler win.
That's what I mean. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense for them to do it again.
Yeah.
I think
it
works out for the Patriots. I really do. I think the Jets are just bad enough to win when it doesn't count at home, and the Pats are going to win the division.
Well, I'll tell you that that relying on Brett Favre for anything is mortifying.
Yeah. So. Well, yeah, we'll get to that. But when are people going to get off that he's a great cold weather quarterback thing? Like, I haven't heard that. No, Peter King, none of these guys should kill him for collapsing like he did in Seattle and in the NFC Championship last year. He can't be given credit anymore.
No, you're right. I mean, he's old.
Yeah.
He gets credit for being an old guy who feels it in his bones.
That's about it. That's all it should be. Kansas City at Cincinnati.
Marvin Lewis has the Bengals really rallying from a historically bad season to just a putrid season.
Yeah.
Who's the road team?
Kansas City's the road team.
Oh, this could be Herm's last game. That's kind
of
sad.
Well, shouldn't it be either of us? Like, the owners should get together and say the losing coach, at the end of the first quarter, whoever's losing, the coach gets fired. That way you only have to watch like 30 minutes of the game and you can turn on something else.
I'm going to say this is Bengals by 3.
I said Bengals by 3 also. It's Bengals by 3. So we both get it.
There
if
we go.
If anyone touches this game, they're out of their minds. They ought to be put away.
Hey, hold on. I have a quick email for you.
Go ahead.
This is from Kirby Wilson in Clearwater, Florida.
Uh-huh.
I think it's hilarious that Cousin Sal gave the middle name of his son to Tony Romo, a player who continually chokes in the clutch, plays in a big market, and dates music stars. Why not just skip the parallels and name the kid with the middle name A-Rod? That's a little harsh, I thought.
That is harsh. Now, wait, let me address this fellow. What's his first name?
Kirby.
Okay, that's all I have to say.
All right, back to the left.
I won't go any further. Kirby. All right, Detroit at Green Bay.
Green Bay, greatest 5-11 team in the history of the NFL? Potentially.
If they lose to the Lions, yes.
If they lose to the Lions, actually, that wouldn't be the case. They could be the greatest 6-10 team ever.
Yeah, right.
Man. I mean, Green Bay should win this by 30-plus points, right?
They should, yeah.
Detroit's, yeah.
I got to say, you talked me into the Saints last week. I like the Lions, and then you're like, no, the Saints are going to kill them. And then on the way to in the car, I heard Darnolovsky is going to start despite having the flu. Oh, could it get worse for the team?
I'm going to say this is artificially high. I'm going to say Packers by 14.5.
That's exactly what I said, and we're both way off. It's only 10.
Ooh.
I mean, this is Detroit Super Bowl, I guess. I just don't see how they put anything together against this team. That's tough. Because they mix the games. All right, Chicago at Houston's an early game.
Did Houston kill your suicide season?
Yes, they did. I went 15 weeks. Week 16, I had Houston over the Raiders. I didn't have many other choices. But
what was the other choice would have lost too, right?
Denver at home against Buffalo, but...
That's really a shame that Tom Cable had to end your suicide run.
Houston had, they just, such a big letdown, I guess, after the Titans. Just killed me.
It's an abomination.
Yeah.
So this was who at Houston?
Chicago at Houston. If Chicago wins and Minnesota loses, Chicago gets that third seed.
I think Chicago stinks.
Yeah, they're lousy.
Lombardi put it good today. They play really hard, but they're just not good. But they try so hard that sometimes it works out for them.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to say Houston by 2.5.
All right. I said Houston by 3. You're going to get this because it's a pick.
That's a mistake. Yeah, I like Houston too.
Houston's going to win this.
They're a good home team. They always rally to the
This is all you need to know about Chicago making the playoffs. Last night, on the Monday night game, 4th and 4 at the 34 of the Packers, and they punt. I mean, then the second quarter. I mean, that's not going to do it.
And also, if the Packers make that field goal, that's it.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, it's funny to hear about this alleged Chargers resurgence.
Right.
Look, they recovered an onside kick to save their season because the guy in the Chiefs jumped up in the air and just dropped it. If he catches it, it's over. The Chargers are done for the season.
Right.
So don't tell me that, like, oh, my God, the Chargers are the hot team. That was the most ridiculous win of the year.
Yeah, they could lose. We'll get to that line. That's a crazy thing, too. All right, Tennessee and Indianapolis. This line's a mess because it's been jumping all over the place, but we'll go by what it opened at.
Well, Indianapolis has zero to play for.
Neither team has anything, yeah. And it's kind of weird that they both made the playoffs, but they're locked into their spots, and they're in the same division, like,
Tennessee at Indianapolis.
Yeah.
What a mess. I mean,
I think Dungy said Manning's playing a little bit, but.
Yeah, but they've proven when they have these games that mean nothing. They play Manning for like one play.
Right.
Well, no offense to Marvin Harrison, but at gunpoint, I'm going to have to go with the Titans being able to run the ball in a meaningless game versus Jim Sorgi passing it. So I'm going to say this is Indianapolis by like 1.
All right, you get it. Here's what happened. It's the Colts by 1.5. I thought 3. I don't know why I thought it'd be so high, but it's Colts by 1. But
and
now
move to Tennessee.
Tennessee by 3.
Yeah, that's what it should be.
Yeah, I guess so. That's another stay away. All right, Giants at Minnesota.
Do we see Vince Young in that game?
You know, they were talking about it. Can you imagine? I guess he does. I guess he's the man to. There,
so. I wrote this last week, but I still think we see him again in a meaningful moment this season. I just think it's just the kind of thing that seems to happen in sports. I remember when the Brady Bledsoe year, when I remember even predicting this. You just knew Bledsoe was going to have to come into one of those games, and it ended up being the Pittsburgh championship, AFC championship game. But I just feel like we're going to see Vince.
Well, by meaningful moment, do you mean does it count if he has a nervous breakdown on the sidelines watching the Titans wrap up the AFC?
It could be that. It could be just the trainers surrounding him as when they should be attending to somebody else. Yeah,
that I could see. Yeah. All right, Giants and Minnesota. Vikings win. They're in.
And the Giants, you know, I've heard the theory that they're going to try hard in this game, but I think the reason they tried hard last year was because the Pats were 15-0. Not really the same historical scenarios here of whether the Vikings can make it or not.
Well, the only thing is, so the Giants played a third string running back. That guy's pretty good, right?
Yeah, it's true.
Ahmad Bradshaw. But
although the fat guy at QB isn't good.
Well, no, I think it'll be David Carr. No, I thought about
worse.
I know. I thought it was Lorenzen, but I looked and it's David Carr.
Is this at Giants Stadium?
No, Minnesota's home and they have to win.
I don't see why the Giants would really give a crap about this game.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Minnesota by 3.5.
Oh, it's higher. I said 5. It's 6.5. I think Minnesota and New England's a good teaser. Those teams, I really think they both win.
Do you trust? Would you really? You really going to advise our dutiful loyal listeners in the holiday season to tease Tavares Jackson?
Honestly,
that's your holiday advice.
Tavares Jackson versus David Carr for a playoff spot.
You're the new Grinch.
All right, forget it. You're right. Just New England so far.
You could not. I will not allow you to advise Tavares Jackson to tease.
All right.
I have to put my foot down on that one.
All right, you're right. Carolina at New Orleans.
You like my Drew Brees theory. I won you over last week with that. He needs like 402 yards or something in this game for the 5,000.
Uh-huh.
And Carolina has nothing to play for? Oh, no, actually they do.
They have to win to get the 2 seed.
It's a good game. I'm going to say this is a pick'em.
Nah.
I'm wrong?
It's Carolina by 3. I said 3.5. They're just better, right? Don't they beat up on... this would be one of the few home NFC South teams to screw it up, right?
Carolina coming off an emotional Sunday night overtime game, now playing on the road again in a dome.
Yeah.
And Jake Delhomme in New Orleans, he's from there.
Right.
I don't know. I feel like that should be a pick'em.
It was probably 10 days ago we thought Carolina, they might be the best team in the NFC, and now they could be a 5 seed if they lose this.
Well, man, remember that week? It was like week 7. I emailed you the Falcons 7-1 division odds. You talked me out of it, like you always talk me out of bets.
Oh, I did.
Yeah.
Oh,
I hate
you.
7-1.
I apologize.
Could have gone against that this week.
Oh my God, you're right. I think Drew Brees. I want to see him break that yardage. What did you say? 402 yards.
I think it's like 3. It's something like 360 to get to 5,000, but it's a little bit over 400 to get to Marina.
I want him to break the record, put a pair of isotoners on, and give Dan Marino the finger. And I want it to come on a 3-yard completion down 17 points in the fourth quarter.
I mean, we have to feel a little bad for Marino, right? This record's all he has. He never won a Super Bowl. Marino's like, really? I can't have this one record? Thought this would stand.
Cleveland at Pittsburgh.
Oh, that's a great game. That's awesome. Pittsburgh's locked in a number 2?
Yes.
And Cleveland's locked into a new coach, a new GM, and a new organization.
Well, before you pick the line, Cleveland has agreed to play its backups the same as they've been doing for the last month. So,
Ken Dorsey may have been the nadir of QBs this year.
Yeah, he was really bad.
I don't know one thing that he does even mediocre. I'm going to say...
Closest to the Bengals pretty well.
Even though Pittsburgh has nothing to play for, I'm still going to say Pittsburgh by 8.5.
Yeah, you're closer. It's 10. I said 7. I don't know.
That's embarrassing if you're the Browns. You can't even get within a touchdown when you're trying to finish your season with dignity and the other team has 0 to play for.
Yeah, I guess even the second-string defense for Steelers will lead them up.
It reminds me, the Pats had a couple of games like that where they had nothing to play for, but their defense, even their reserves, were just so good they overwhelmed the other team.
Yeah.
Could happen.
6-6 right now, including ties.
I'm a little off this week, I got
to
say.
Well, this is a weird one. I don't even know what to take. We got to figure someone to put with the Patriots right now. Oakland at Tampa Bay.
What a collapse by Tampa. And also Oakland, continuing the roller coaster.
Yeah.
Their 4 wins were all like these dominant wins. They have 4 wins or 5 wins?
You just should never. Is it 4? I think they have 4. I could be
wrong. But all of them were like, you know, legitimately good wins where they controlled the game and dominated the other team.
Yep.
Tampa not necessarily out of it.
No, if they win and the Eagles beat the Cowboys, they get the 6th spot. We watched this game together. Let's do this again. Remember we watched the Super Bowl game together on a bus from San Diego to L.A.?
That's right. That was the first night of Jimmy Kimmel Live.
That's right. Let's do it again. Let's blow off the schedule and just take a bus and watch this game.
It's too bad we can't call Daniel right now, our former executive producer, and have him explain why he gave Warren Sapp 2 segments but George Clooney 3 minutes. I think he was advised by Art Shell on that decision.
I think that's another podcast. They deal with that stuff.
Daniel Kelsey. Jimmy still defends that, by the way.
Yeah.
Look, Warren Sapp at the moment was much bigger than George Clooney.
He's going to be.
He just won the Super Bowl. Oakland at Tampa.
Yeah.
Tampa by 8.
All right. Yeah, you were off even more than I was. I said 9.5. It's 13.5.
Oh, that's absurd.
Don't they score like 15 points a game? I don't see how they.
That's an absurd line. Tampa's terrible too.
Yeah.
I mean they're going the other way.
Yeah.
I don't get that.
All right, we're on to the afternoon games. These are most, you know, I'll get rid of the lousy ones first. It's Washington at San Francisco.
I think Washington played their last good game of the year last week. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say San Francisco by 2.5.
Who would you say was favored?
It's Washington at San Francisco, right?
Right.
San Francisco by 2.5.
Yeah, you see, you get that. I said Washington by 2. I don't know why I did that, but San Francisco's favored by 3.
All right.
Yeah, we'll just move on from that. That's nothing. Seattle at Arizona.
Let's move on quickly. Seattle at Arizona.
By the way, this just back real quick. Is this 4 wins or 5 in a row for Singletary if he wins?
No, yeah, something like that. Well, we called it like 3 weeks ago. We said they looked like they were going to be the team that just covers every week for whatever reason. Well, I'm sorry. This was who at Arizona?
Seattle's at Arizona.
Oh, I love Seattle. They carry home ground off the field. I predicted this.
By the way, that was the best by far 3-win crowd I've ever heard or seen, right, in Seattle?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you got to hand it to them. But on the other hand, it's been such a traumatic year. I think they're rallying around anything.
Yeah, they could still win the division, right? 4-11, 5-10, Arizona's 5-10. Yeah.
They need a lot of things to happen.
Seems like they're the best team in that division.
Man, I don't – I know the line's going to be skewed toward Arizona, but I don't – they really haven't shown any semblance of anything. I'm going to say Arizona by 4.
You hit it exactly. Because it's 4. I said 2, but it's now 6. It went up to 6.
I like Seattle. I think Arizona stinks.
All right, now the 3 good late afternoon games.
Yes.
Jacksonville at Baltimore. Baltimore needs to win to get in, I'm pretty sure, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
The Pats get in if Baltimore loses.
Right.
Or if Miami loses.
Right.
Yeah. It's got to be like 9.5. I'm going to say Baltimore by 9.5.
All right. Well, I was way off on this. I said 5.5. You say 9.5. It's 11.5. I think it's 12 now, but it opened at 11.5.
It's a little high.
This is my bet of the week. The Jags aren't that bad. They had a chance to win last week over the Colts. I love it. I love this. I love the Jags. They might win this game.
Well, I know I'll be rooting for it.
Yeah. I know. I'm not betting on Flacco to blow anyone out just yet. Love the Jags here.
I agree. If the Jags, they won last week, right?
Jags, no, they played the Colts tough, and they lost by 7.
But they beat Green Bay in week 15. They played the Colts tough. Then they win this game. At least they're not feeling, like, completely horrible about it, you know?
Yeah, they stay within 10. Mm. Miami at the Jets. By the way, they really kind of screwed Madden over, didn't they?
That he didn't get to see his man Favre?
Yeah, his boyfriend Favre is playing. They wanted an AFC game to be flexed into that Sunday night spot, and Madden's cruiser was parked in the Meadowlands anyway for the Panthers Giants. He wouldn't have had to move.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Hey, it's got to be Jets by 3.
Yeah, you got it. I said 3.5. I think that puts you on top for the week. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Yeah, 10.
I've really been the Heath Ledger to your Jake Gyllenhaal this season.
Good. Good. You know how that ends up.
You never saw that movie, so that's right. Ledger died in the end. That's too bad.
Dallas at Philly. This is the last one. Well, before the night game, I guess we'll pick.
Man, I'm sorry in advance for whatever horrible thing happens.
What else could I break now that the remote's gone?
Do you ever think about just not watching it? Like, just go to the movies and see the Benjamin Button movie or whatever?
Yeah, I guess I could do that.
Oh, man.
I really should. What's the point? What is the point? These guys don't care about me.
I got to say, Philly by 3.
All right. Well, I called this exactly. I said Philly by 1, and that's what it is. What I should do is bet $5,000 on the Eagles, right? I mean, talk about buying a win.
Is it Philly by 1 because potentially this game could mean nothing if Tampa wins?
The NFL did the Cowboys a favor by moving the Cowboys-Phillies to 4:15 Eastern. And the Tampa, right, if Tampa wins early, then Philly has nothing to play for. Not that they're not going to come out like gangbusters and beat us up anyway. But
I should have factored that in. So that's pretty advantageous to you.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. And by the way, I want to thank, I don't know what NFL Network anchor it was, but after the Cowboys-Ravens game, he said a few times that the Bucs have to lose both games for the Cowboys to get in, and I racked my brain till like 3 in the morning trying to figure out how this was the case, and it was not the case, of course. We went on a tiebreaker.
Oh, I like that. Terry Bradshaw on Sunday was talking about how nice it was that Mike Holmgren won his final game. Nobody corrected him. He just kept expounding on it. Right. Terry, actually, there's one more week left, but
yeah. All right, and finally Sunday night. This is the big one: Denver at San Diego.
So NBC had a choice of Dallas versus Philly or Denver San Diego, and went with Denver San Diego.
I think something happened with where the conferences were lopsided. Like NBC had used up too many NFC games or something. So
Fox could, I think, don't they? Aren't they able to protect one game each week too?
Yeah, but there's also the balance figures into of the conferences, which I thought like the Jets Dolphins would still, even if the Jets couldn't. I mean, what was going to happen? That's still a big game, Jets Dolphins, right?
Yeah, you could argue that that probably should have been the late game, but maybe they didn't want to screw the Pats over completely. But on the other hand, Dallas really does get an advantage with.
Yep.
Anyway,
I would like to watch this game with Ed Hockley, right? It's been a while since the Hawks.
How great would it be if they assigned him to it, though? I mean, can you imagine? They just said, screw it, and they assigned him?
But it is great that he's not going to be working a game while it's on. Like, he's got to be rooting for the Chargers, right? The Hockleys haven't had me over in a while. I'm going to go over there.
You would think that he would be rooting for whatever would take him off the hook, which would be the Chargers. I think Denver is terrible. I really think they're just bad. Like, you look at, they've had one really nice win over the past few weeks, and it was at the Jets, which now after we've seen the Jets for a while, maybe that wasn't such a good win.
Mm-hmm.
They lost to Oakland. They got killed last week. I don't know if they're good. So I'm going to say San Diego by 6.5.
Wow, that's a better call than I made. I said San Diego by 4.5. It's 9.
Oh!
9 is very high, right?
That's a little high.
I can't believe how high that line is for a team that was 4-8 3 weeks ago.
That should have been, well, what, or could have been 5-9.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
That's high.
That's ridiculous. But can you imagine how great it would be if they adopted my rule that you had to finish above 500 to make the playoffs?
Yeah.
And potentially Denver, neither of these teams could make the playoffs.
Yeah, the Patriots win the West. That'd be good.
They got to figure out something. And this isn't sour grapes with the Pats, because I would be saying this, whoever it was. They just, if when you're in a division with four teams and the other three teams are terrible, it's a huge advantage. It's too big of an advantage.
All year we've been looking forward to Colts at Broncos, right? The 4-5 game. And so we can pound the Colts, who will probably be a slight favorite, we figured.
Yeah.
But now if the Chargers win, we've talked about it, it's a little different, right?
Yeah, I don't know. Hey, well, we shouldn't spoil next week's podcast, but I don't know if the Colts are favored in that game if San Diego wins this one by like 30-3 or some crazy score. So who won? I won again?
Yeah, I don't want to count, but I think you won. You won. You're Heath Ledger, whatever you want to be, you won.
Whatever pop culture analogy involving a movie Anyway, well, we're waiting for our friend Dickie.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's going to call because he's doing all these Christmas shows back in Boston for his band, the Mighty Mighty Boston. So we thought we'd promote it, and you could make fun of him a little bit.
That'll be fun.
You'd enjoy that, right? But while we kill time, if you had to pick a Super Bowl matchup, he's ready. Here he is. Let's bring him in.
I'd pick the Bostones and Third Eye Blind.
Who would you pick as a Super Bowl matchup?
Right now, Giants Steelers.
All right, let's go to them in Boston, Massachusetts. The lead singer of the Mighty Mighty Bostones, the announcer for Jimmy Kimmel Live, our friend Dickie Barrett. Dickie, what's happening?
How are you, William? How you doing, sports guy?
Our friend Sal is also on the phone with us.
Dickie, you can get excited. I'm here, too.
Yeah.
How are you, pal?
What's happening?
Are Vinny and Fran there yet?
Yeah, they're all here. The whole family's here.
They've arrived at town. This is the most wonderful time of the year, isn't it?
Dickie, tell us the times, dates, and venue for your Mighty Mighty Boston Holiday Show.
Let's get right to it. We're doing four shows in Central Square in Cambridge at the Middle East Club, and those are sold out. so there's no luck there. Unless you're in town, Willie, then I'll put you on the guest list if you happen to be in town.
But what about Craigslist and eBay? You can potentially get in.
No, we kind of set up a system where you can get around that. We've got a virtually scalper-free system going here. That's pissed off a lot of people, but it's also made a lot of people happy.
All right. So you have those four. Anything else?
Then the night after that, we're going to down in New Haven, Connecticut, and playing at Toad's Place there, and there are tickets available there. And then on New Year's Eve, it's Lubo's, which is it's actually a big theater now in downtown Providence, and we're doing our New Year's Eve show there. And then it's back to California for a warm winter's nap.
And what do you have, like 18 inches of snow back home right now?
It was incredible, dude. I flew in 2 mornings ago. I took a red eye and got in just before the blizzard. I think it was like the last flight, the last plane that moved on those runways. And then everything was tied up and a ton of snow was dumped and it's freezing cold. And then, it took me about a half an hour to go, why am I here? Why do I look? Why am I not? You're back home, right, Bill?
No, I'm actually still in LA. Sal.
Yeah.
If you had to pick the top five least likely people to move from Boston to L.A. and then decide that they weren't coming back, Dickie and I would have been in the top five, right?
You guys are the top five. I don't know. I don't know.
Because this is what happened is we had the misfortune of moving in to the Jimmy Kimmel compound. And once you're in there's no leaving. He makes it so pleasant, right?
Yeah, well, you miss Cruz.
You guys both missed Tom Cruise at Jimmy's house on Sunday.
Sal, tell the story very quickly.
Oh yeah, I didn't tell you about this. Yeah.
No.
Well, I don't know if people want to get now, but screw it. We're talking. We're friends, right? Who cares?
Yeah. No, tell it.
Tom Cruise came by. He was on.
Story?
He was in our show last week. On our show last week, and ended up airing last night. And he jokingly, we thought, said. Yeah, I hear you cook for the fellas on Sunday. I cook, too. I'd like to stop by. And Jimmy laughed it off and said that would be the weirdest thing in the world. And then, sure enough, as the later games were winding down, there's a knock at the door, and it's Tom and Mrs. Cruz, not Katie Holmes, but his mother. Tom Cruz brought his mother to football Sunday.
How long did he stay for?
He might still be there. No, he was there like 2 hours. He hung around.
2 hours?
He was there a long time, yeah.
How did Brad behave?
I'm telling you, he resolved mine and Jeff Ross's worst celebrity feud. He listened to both sides and recommended that I apologize, and I did. And among other things, Carolla showed him his touchdown dance where he, craps out a football, and it was delightful.
What was his reaction to that?
He smiled. He seemed to enjoy it. Our executive producer, Jill Lederman, didn't like it too much. But no, Cruz enjoyed it.
You didn't.
So Jill was there too?
Oh yeah, she was there. Yeah.
Wait. So you didn't make Cruz reenact any All the Right Moves scenes outside?
No. We didn't do that. We weren't. We weren't that chummy with him. Just yet. Although when he was
showed up in Jimmy's living room in his underpants,
when he forced me to apologize, I said, "What kind of kangaroo court is this?"
I can't even believe that. It gets weirder and weirder.
It really does. I mean, I thought
why I didn't leave.
I thought last week was weird with Don Draper and the Killers, but yeah, it's Kimmel stepped it up. We might have to have like a webcam there or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, I told John Hamm, who was also there. I was like, "You are insignificant, buddy. You're not even close to the best-looking guy here." And, he knew it.
Top five weirdest events. We got to give that to Roddy Piper putting Weinstein out by the pool, right?
He choked our friend Weinstein out into sleeper hold. Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty good. Man, star-studded year. All right, we have to go. Dickie.
Listen, let me just say, because Dickie is too proud to push it, but Medium Rare is his CD. It's got a bunch of great songs. My son knows it by heart. He won't even sing the songs on it for the concert, so don't expect that.
But, so Medium Rare on Amazon.com, right?
Go out and buy it.
Yeah, go out and buy it for our friend Dickie.
I miss you a lot. William, I miss you as well. I miss all you guys. Love you very much. Merry Christmas. Thanks for letting me plug, Billy.
Good luck. Good luck on the shows, and say hi to everybody back home.
Okay, Tom. Take care.
All right. Take care, cousin Sal.
All right, Bill.
Listen. Good luck this week. Just remember, it's only a game.
I know. I'm gonna break. But send me something to break, will you?
I'll send you like a vase, a nice fake vase.
I could do a vase.
Just shatter it. All right. We'll talk to you next week.
Take care, man.
Bye bye. All right. Christmas is coming up, and as most of you know, one of my favorite Christmas movies, if not the famous Christmas movie. I love Christmas Vacation. That's probably in my top three. I don't know what the second of the top three would be because I'm having a brain lock, but in the top three would be Rocky IV, which happened, the big fight happened on Christmas Day. I count it as a Christmas movie. It's a little controversial, but I had to have somebody from the Rocky series on for the holidays, and who better than the guy who played Apollo Creed, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Carl Weathers, what's happening?
Well, I'm sitting here in beautiful Southern California on a sunny day with clouds in the sky. No rain falling at the time, but our sky is clear because we got a little rain and hopefully not too many mudslides are happening. And what else can I say? Life's beautiful.
Well, it's great to have you on. I grew up with the Rocky franchise. I feel like you've been in my life basically since I can ever remember anything.
Did you grow up with it, Bill, but so did I. I feel like I've been in my life ever since then.
Well, you play, a lot of people don't know, you played with the Raiders.
Yes, right? I did. I was with them for a moment. A great part of my past life and one of my past lives, and still involved with the team sort of peripherally, and get to visit with a lot of the guys every once in a while. Happy days as in the past, but still good to be a part of that family.
How many NFL teams did you play for? Just them, or were there other ones?
Yeah, just the Raiders, and then I went on to the CFL and played in Canada.
What position?
The Lions.
What position?
Linebacker.
Oh. So, and then somewhere in the mid, I was looking at your IMDb, which is fantastic. Your IMDb, all the things you've been in. You've been in some classic TV shows. There's like one episode, or it's like Starsky and Hutch, and Good Times,
yep.
And $6 Million Man.
Yep.
A lot of my favorites growing up. But then, you know, Rocky happens in 76. So obviously you had to audition for Apollo Creed, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Those were interesting days because as a young actor, of course, you come into Los Angeles with stars in your eyes and dreams of... you know, of making it big. I don't know that anybody dreams of making it small. So,
right.
You know, you come here, and at that time, the wonderful thing about television was there was so many shows on that an athletic guy, a physical actor like myself, could be a part of.
Right.
And as you said, you know, between Starsky and Hutch and $6 Million Man and Kung Fu and...
Who were you on Good Times? Do you remember?
Say again?
Who were you on Good Times? Do you remember the role you played in that episode?
On Good Times, I played the neighbor's boyfriend.
Ah.
I can't even remember what the story was, but I came in as the neighbor's boyfriend.
So you were Winona's boyfriend, probably.
I think it was Winona, yeah.
Yeah.
I think, but you know, that's so long ago.
Yeah. Oh man, what a shame you guys couldn't have worked it out. So with Rocky,
I like real life, you know.
So with Rocky, so you get Apollo Creed, and Stallone is telling you, basically, he modeled the character after Muhammad Ali, right? So you have to figure out.
You know what? I think that may have been a part of his intent, but you know how things morph from intent to reality. I think what happened was he was inspired by the Ali Wepner fight.
Right.
And so he created this character for himself, which was very Wepner-like, a guy who, you know, had showed a lot of promise and who was big and who was tough. But there was a side of him that was sensitive, for lack of a better word, and would never quite accomplish the kind of notoriety or celebrity that a guy like Ali would accomplish. And so he created this character who was Ali-like. To pit against his Rocky character, and I was just lucky enough to walk in on a particular day when no one else seemed to be able to capture the essence of that character, and you know the director and the producers and saw me and saw what I did, and apparently were somehow enthralled with whatever I delivered on that day.
And how much of Apollo was Carl Weathers, and how much of it was? Like pieces of other people that you...
Well, I think a lot of Apollo was the dreaming Carl Weathers, you know?
Right.
Was the Carl Weathers who could imagine himself being all of that. But, of course, a lot of that was borrowed from the likes of Muhammad, I'd, of course, you know, like many kids, idolized.
Yeah.
And the likes of all the other great boxers who were around at the time, and some who had long since gone, from Joe Louis to Kid Gavilan to, you know, the you name it.
Right.
Anybody who'd ever been a great boxer and I saw film on, I kind of borrowed from.
How,
Jackson, you know, it didn't matter. I was very eager at that time simply to give a great portrayal of a very flamboyant and successful champion.
Can you remember all the nicknames that Apollo Creed had?
Oh, well, I can remember a few. I can remember the King of Sting,
yeah,
the Master of Disaster, the Count of Monte Fisto.
That was my favorite. I like that one the most.
Only, you know, it's interesting, but only somebody like Sylvester could come up with coining a phrase like that one.
Yeah.
And there were some others, I guess, that probably escaped me at the moment. But but one I liked most, quite frankly, that I found funny because I was a kid. I grew up with Mad Magazine.
Yeah.
And I remember, and a lot of the audience won't even know what Mad Magazine was, I'm sure, but I remember there was one, after every Rocky, they did sort of this story about the Rocky saga.
I remember that, because I got Mad Magazine. I totally remember this.
Well, there you go, because one of the names they gave Apollo was Appalling Greed.
Nice.
And I love that, because I thought that was funny. Appalling Greed.
Well, how hard was it for you to pull off the boxing scenes? Did you have to, like, get special training, or was it, like, natural ability?
Yeah, I was never a boxer to begin with. And I had really great trainers. And, of course, again, you know, as every kid did, you pretended that you were whatever that thing is that you wanted to be, you know?
Yeah.
And if you were a kid and you saw Muhammad Ali and you were with your buddies hanging out, you'd show them how you could do Muhammad Ali.
Yeah.
And so that was sort of, you know, sort of a part of I guess our national consciousness that a lot of kids, a lot of young guys walked around with. And of course I was one of them. So when you get the opportunity as a trained actor, you know, I came out of theater to be able to take that sort of childlike, dream of wanting to be an Apollo Creed. And to be able to actually, you know, wrap that in your professional skills and in a way kind of co-opt Muhammad, you know, and transform him into a character for the screen. I mean, my God, man, how sweet is that?
Well, here's how I know you did a good job, because in my living room in 1977, or 76, whenever the soundtrack came out, I used to listen to all the songs, and I would fight you in my living room.
Fight Bill.
15 rounds, and we would go at it. You don't remember this because you weren't
Bill,
there.
I remember. I remember. I felt like somebody was hitting me, but they were rabbit punching me, you know. And I couldn't figure out who was hitting me. I kept looking behind me, you know.
Yeah, I would reenact. Well, I'd reenact like being sprawled on the ground, trying to pull myself up on the coffee table as Mickey's telling me to stay down. And so yeah, you and I boxed a lot of rounds. So
I want to know one thing: how many things did you break in the living room?
Probably a few. But somehow I beat you, even though I was like 6 or 7. Somehow I was able to take you down.
Well, here's what I want to know. Did your mom ever yell at you and say, "What the heck are you doing in there?"
Absolutely.
Of course.
I was an only child.
Say, "Mom, I'm beating on Apollo."
I was an only child. Well, who else was I going to play with? I had to have some imaginary friends.
Well, you know what? I'm so happy. It's either me or it's that giant rabbit, right? So, you know, better. There's another reference, a movie reference, that somebody will be out there saying, "What are you talking about, a giant rabbit?"
Well, I'll top that one, because the other guy I was terrified of was when Andre the Giant played Bigfoot in $6 Million Man. So I had a lot of fake fights with Bigfoot as well.
Oh, my goodness, man. You really, really are a lost cause.
I know. It's terrible. So wait a second. So Rocky comes out. So you see a screening of Rocky. And at this point, you know, it wasn't an independent movie, but it was definitely kind of made on the down low a little bit. And
yes.
At what point did you realize, all right, my life is going to change because of this movie?
Well, the point you realize that things change is when the night before the movie's out, you're walking down the streets of Manhattan and nobody pays you any attention. And the morning after the movie comes out, the street vendors are yelling, "Yo, Apollo."
Wow.
Know your life has changed. I don't think you're prepared for that. You know, It's not like you have a coterie of people around you and a mentor who's preparing you, and you go to school and say, okay, tomorrow, you know, the D-Day is whenever it is, and on that day you're going to have some sort of fame and celebrity because people are going to recognize you.
Yeah.
Might be the way you dream about it, but it doesn't normally happen that way. So you're not quite prepared for that kind of recognition, you know?
Well, and back then, you know, you're talking mid-70s, there's no internet, there's no cable TV, there's no iPods, there's
there
no DirecTV. Well, I mean, there was basically... We had three network channels, and going to the movies at the time was, I think, a bigger communal experience than it is now. So if a movie like Rocky becomes a big movie, everybody feels like they have to see it. I don't know if that's the case now. Now you can wait till it comes out on DVD or...
Yeah, you know, but I think, you know, there are still those movies. There are those iconic sort of franchises, as we call
yeah.
them, that people will stand in line for and be there and want to go see. They want to be the first to see it. And
true.
Experience is, of course, a communal experience. I think, though, your point regarding Rocky is very true. Number one, it came out of nowhere, so no one had sort of a premonition of, oh, this is going to be, well, not no one, because a few of us thought we had something. But, you know, the audience isn't aware of what's coming.
Right.
So there's no publicity because there's no budget.
Whereas like with something like Jaws, there was the book and people knew that they were making it to a movie and something like that.
Yeah. I mean, you had a few things going for a movie like Jaws, and it was you know, universal. And I mean, you know, it wasn't the Steven Spielberg we know today, but it's Steven Spielberg, who had done wonderful work prior to that.
Right.
I know I remember Duel was one of the scariest movies I ever saw that he did, and I was such a fan of the way he constructed movies as a director, you know?
Right.
And then it had Richard Dreyfuss in it, and it had Scheider, and you know, and one of my all-time favorites, Robert Shaw.
Yeah.
Also, that movie, it seemed to me, was like, you know, that movie could get press. People would know about that. But when it came to Rocky, you know, the most noteworthy person in the cast was Burgess Meredith, who had been around forever, of course.
And maybe Talia Shire, because she was in The Godfathers.
Yeah, she was in The Godfather, but you know, they couldn't sell the movie on Talia because it wasn't really about Talia. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it wasn't. It really was about Rocky, so you didn't have, you didn't have the star of so-and-so be able to sort of promote the movie. You had a few of us who were relative unknowns.
So the movie's a huge success. You're living in Los Angeles, I assume, at the time?
Actually, I was living in Oakland. I hadn't that long ago been with the Raiders and then went to Canada, and I was still living in Oakland.
Well, you become a very famous celebrity in a very famous movie during probably the best era to become a famous celebrity, the disco era 70s. That must have been fun.
One of the best eras.
Oh, what was a better era than the late 70s?
Well, I don't know so much that it was a better era, but I think that the era of studios having actors under contract, you know, the years of Humphrey Bogart and the early years of Marlon Brando, and I mean, there were so many actors out there who just did phenomenal work.
Yeah.
And made movies that today we still revere, you know?
Yeah.
So I think there was something about that era that, as I look back on it, really would have been fascinating to be a part of. However, to your point, the 70s created some magnificent movies, and there were some directors that came out of the 70s that still today are considered some of the best directors that have ever, you know, gotten behind a camera. So...
See, I was going another direction because I'm a degenerate. I was thinking more about like the babes, the partying.
Oh man, come on!
You know, the late 70s. Come on, that was the golden era.
I wish there was babes and partying.
You're Apollo Creed. How are you not having babes every night?
Bill, I was so naive. I was so naive at the time. I had no idea that I was a celebrity. To me, it was all about Rocky, and what you were really out there doing now was trying to build a career and get another job, you know? And there weren't that many roles that I really that I really wanted that were coming my way. It was a very different time, you know?
And did you feel a little stereotyped, too, because of Apollo Creed?
Oh,
like, you were pigeonholed as that character? Yeah.
You know, one of the greatest detriments to, in some ways, to growth is almost instant success.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when you do something that's so definable, in a way, people think, oh, well, you were a boxer. That's who you are.
Yeah.
You know, there's no idea that, oh, this is an actor, and I didn't have the luxury of a promotional campaign, you know, by a studio who touted me as an actor, and I didn't have publicity people and all that sort of stuff, because I made no money off that first movie.
But the second one, when they came to you for Rocky II, you're ready to go.
Well, I was ready to go. However, the story of Hollywood is you can be fooled by a lot of things. And at the time, I was not represented by people who, I think, not the best way to say it and the kindest way to say it and the way to keep myself out of trouble is I don't think they had my interest at heart.
Because you had a lot of leverage given that the rematch.
I had more leverage than I realized
yeah.
I had.
Yeah.
Put it that way. Far more than I realized I had.
But then Rocky III, you were essential to that one, too. So by that time, it
Rocky
was good,
III
right?
was a whole different ballgame. Rocky III, I was a little more savvy, and I had a decent agent at the time, and it made life a little more beneficial in a lot of ways.
That's good.
But, you know, you look back on it, and you realize, you know, you realize how naive you were and how little you knew about the business part of this thing that we're in.
Mm. So how did, you know, you've obviously known Stallone now for 33 years. You do this first movie with him. He's a nobody. Second movie, he's writing it, directing it. He's one of the most famous people in the country. Did you feel like he stayed close to what he was in that first, or were there some inevitable changes? Like, what did you see from him?
Oh, man, I don't know that any of us have stayed close to what we were in the first movie.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you either go forward or you go backward. You can't stay the same.
Yeah.
You know, I think... it's inevitable that if you try to stay the same, you are going to go backwards. So, you know, the growth there and the maturation and hopefully a certain degree of sophistication and education, I mean, you learn things as you go along, and you recognize that this business is a very, very, very lucrative business in some cases, but it also requires a tremendous amount of money to get something going. So I think we all change. We better change.
So you liked his changes for the better?
Oh, yeah. I think all of our lives have changed for the better. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean, though, along with change isn't going to come some stuff that's not going to be particularly pleasant. I mean, that's par for the course. You're going to have the good stuff, and you're going to have the bad stuff.
So did you see that you did four movies with Stallone? Were in two, three, or four, was there one where you're like, oh, my God, it's gone to his head?
No, not with me. I never saw that with me. Maybe somebody else saw that, but...
No, I was talking about Stallone.
My experience in all four movies was, first of all, we knew the movie was called Rocky. It wasn't called Apollo. So you're going in knowing that, right?
Yeah.
And in terms of a working relationship, you know, I was given actually a lot of flexibility in terms of what I was doing and how I was doing it, but I'm not dumb. I mean, I recognize what the parameters were with this character and what was essentially, you know, sort of instigated in 1976 when we shot the first one. So this is who you are, and this is what you do, and this is why you're there, and this is what you're after. And regardless of whether it's Rocky or it's Star Wars,
yeah,
you know, the same parameters in writing and acting and delivering a movie pretty much exist.
So you get the Rocky III script. Oh, first of all, you get Rocky II, you lose in Rocky II. You get the Rocky III script, now you're going to train. You're going to train Stallone. So you're like, oh, cool. This will be fun. You get the Rocky IV script, you're going to die in the ring. This Russian steroids guy is going to kill you in the ring.
Not good.
Yeah, you were bummed.
Not good. Bummed. Absolutely.
Because you could have been in Rocky V and Rocky VI, but instead you're killed off.
By the way, even if Apollo Creed died in Rocky IV, he could have still been in Rocky V and Rocky VI.
Yeah, it's like a ghost, yeah.
Did you see me in Happy Gilmore come back, and I was in heaven, and I had my hand back? To see what could happen in the movies? Fantasy.
How sad was it to kill off Apollo?
Well, it was sad for me for a lot of reasons. Of course, one was there wasn't going to be another paycheck from Rocky, okay? You know, let's get real.
Yeah.
There was no longer was Apollo going to be a part of that franchise, and so, you know, but who knew there was going to be a Rocky V? I didn't know. Nobody knew, really, you know?
Yeah.
We didn't know after Rocky I there was going to be a Rocky II.
Hey, who knew Rocky IV was going to end the Cold War?
Who knew that?
So you like his speech, you know, that turned everything around. Nope. So what was your favorite scene that you did? If you had to pick one scene that you loved the most.
I'll tell you one that I enjoy watching the most. This is bizarre. It is James Brown. Being on stage with James Brown in Las Vegas.
Yes.
To me was like one of the moments in my life I will always cherish. Because I grew up idolizing James Brown. I mean, how many kids didn't?
Right.
You know, and certainly kids from my neighborhood. I mean, you're talking about in music, in popular music, an absolute icon around the world. James Brown has influenced more musicians and more people on stage. I mean, you look at Michael Jackson, he's a version of James Brown, you know?
Right.
But, you know, to be on stage with him and to be in the context of Rocky and to have that whole sort of show going on in Las Vegas, I mean, it was like a dream, a fantasy moment in movies, you know, that you could put on and say, if you did movies and you watched movies and you said, what is one of the most spectacular moments ever in a film? That's like going back to the time of the Romans in the Colosseum, you know,
right.
A huge act, center stage.
Yeah.
So I just remember that and love that.
Well, hey, as Warner Wolf said, what started out as a joke turned into a disaster because it ended with Rocky cradling your lifeless body as there's 6,000 people in the ring, all of them interviewing Drago, and you're not getting any hospital attention, which I would have been upset about if I were you.
Well, I got to
get a doctor in there.
I got to tell you something. And nobody was. I remember Sly calling out, "Where's the doctor? Get a doctor in here!" And you know, the doctor was off having a drink, or he was at the crap table. I can't stop what was going on there.
No ambulance.
Was laying in the ring. I mean, come on.
You and Sly both got hurt filming the fight scenes. I think was it the first one? Both of you suffered injuries that were fairly serious, right?
I never had anything serious, but you know, it was very, very, very tough. Go for as many hours as we go every day in those fights.
Yeah.
You know, you literally would be dead tired and you've got to do another take or your body would be cramping up because you're just sweating constantly. I mean, for 8-10 hours a day. And, you know, even though we had masseur there and you know, we were being hydrated constantly, it's just that number of hours to do that kind of physical stuff just caused pulls and strains and, you know, to this day I've got some nerve damage in an arm because
really?
A lot of punches that don't connect with anything.
Yeah.
And every once in a while somebody does connect and it doesn't feel too good. So, you know, it wasn't severe damage, but it took its toll.
Did either of you accidentally knock each other down?
No, I don't think anybody, but I know there were a number of times we really got tangled up and wound up trading some punches, kind of like, you know, back off a little bit.
Really? Oh, so it got a little heated in there a couple of times.
Well, it's kind of, you know, it's kind of like macho stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Get in there and it just happens, man.
Oh, see, I thought he like tore his pectoral muscle or something in one of the fights.
Yeah, he did, but I think a lot of that came in training to bulk up for some of the stuff, you know?
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah. So then, wait, I had one more fight question. I wanted to ask you about the training scene. I've joked about it in comms. You guys have the beach race at the end.
We have the what?
You on the beach in Rocky III.
Yeah.
You know, you're training him. Is there any way in real life Stallone beats you in a sprint?
We should put that race together and find out.
Did you have to? It looked like in the climactic scene when he passes you, I felt like you were on cruise control. I got to be honest.
Is that what you felt like, huh?
That's what I felt like. I just feel like...
Are you looking for a comment on that?
I just feel like you if you're really going all out, you probably beat Sloan. But in your defense, this is Apollo. Apollo wants Rocky to beat him, so he's subconsciously holding up, right?
A little something to get the guy to feel he can get it done, you know what I mean?
Right.
Any great trainer, any great coach is going to find a way to motivate... You know, and that's what Apollo was about, motivating. Now, did Apollo throw that race? I'm not going to go that far. I'm never going to go that far, but let's put some money on the line and see who can take care of whom.
At what point when you guys were hugging each other and jumping up and down in the water, did it start to feel a little weird?
Well, at the time that his hand was sort of going down my back, I thought, wait a minute here. You know, this embrace is lasting a little too long.
Yeah.
It never felt weird, man. Come on, you know. have you ever looked at these guys in the huddle slapping each other on the butt? Come on.
Well, I'd like to thank you for that moment because I've beaten that joke into the ground more than ever, really, about the awkward beach hug. It's been great.
I thought you were going to say that you meant to thank me for that moment because that's one of your favorite moments ever.
No.
The good old days. No, you weren't going to go there.
No. It's brought me a lot of comedic mileage. All right.
Well, you know what? I'm happy that we could give you a laugh or two.
Hey, one more thing about your IMDb that I'd forgot. Well, actually, two things. I loved Action Jackson. And, you know, you guys had Sharon Stone.
Yes.
Really, you know, about 4 or 5 years before Basic Instinct. But when she was like a little hidden secret, I love Sharon Stone.
No, she was beautiful, wasn't she?
She was smoking hot in that movie. Vanity was in it. She was smoking hot. I loved Action Jackson. Why? How come no Action Jackson 2?
You know what? Been beating that one around for years. Couldn't get the producers to get off of it. Let us make the movie. I don't know, man. I've been asked that question from people from... I've been asked that question from Australia to Germany to the UK to the US. People liked that movie.
Yeah, it was great. But I almost, would you say there was like a little bit of racism there? Like people, they didn't want black action heroes in the 80s? Because that's the only logical thing I can think of.
First of all, I don't know if that's true because there were a few around.
Who?
One of them being Jim Brown. Jim Brown was one of the biggest stars ever.
Yeah, but Action Jackson was like a big budget action film.
No, it wasn't. Action Jackson wasn't a big budget. That was part of the problem. Here's the deal. This is what I think happened. What I think happened was when we made the picture, it was one studio was around. That studio went away, sold their entire library to Warner Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Warner Brothers had some action stars that I think they banked a lot on. One of them in particular was doing the same sort of stuff, and I don't think they wanted to have a conflict. And as a result, the producer wanted a lot of money to sort of take his name off of it, and eventually it just wasn't going to happen.
Because if you had made the sequel, like say 90, and then Basic Instinct coming out the next year, and you had Sharon Stone in it again, it would have been a much bigger movie. Because like, oh my God, Sharon Stone, blah 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 blah. But as it turned out, it was like you missed it like a year.
Man, why aren't you producing? Come on.
I should be. Listen, you're not telling me anything I don't know. The other thing that I loved Action Jackson, and it really bothers me that there's never a sequel. The other thing that I thought is interesting is that you hosted SNL in 1988.
Yes.
How was that?
Oh, that was fun. That was an awful lot of fun and scary as hell.
Yeah.
Those shows are real. You know, you don't have any. Got rehearsal time, and then all of a sudden it's time for the show to go on, and bang, you do the dress, and then you do the other, and they're both taped, and you know, it's flying, it's fast and furious. But it was a lot of fun, an awful lot of fun. A great bunch of really talented people on that show, always have been.
So you're still acting, I assume, right?
Oh, yeah, but I'm doing a lot of directing now. And
really?
More and more, yeah. I'm actually sitting here, my editor just walked in to work on this project I'm about to finish up.
Interesting. Have you directed anything that's already out?
Yeah, I've done some television. I've been doing television since 93 and had a fairly decent run and then went away and started raising cattle. And when I came back, you know, as so much of Hollywood is, you leave for 5 minutes, you're dead. So that's it. I died and now I've come back to life and now it's getting myself reintroduced to the world.
Oh, excellent. Well, great luck with that. Thanks so much for coming on. Thanks for all your great work over the years, and really enjoyed everything you've done.
Hey, Bill, I sure appreciate it, and good talking to you, man. I look forward to talking to you again sometime.
All right, take care. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, and now for our Jewish readers, a holiday song from my daughter.
Welcome, Hanukkah, Feast of Light. Let's burn a candle every night. Watch the dreidel spinning around. Eat the latkes, taste and round. Welcome, Hanukkah, Feast of Light. Let's burn a candle every night.
Nice work. Say happy holidays.
Happy holidays, Joe.
All right, good job, Zoe.
So I get to sign off.
Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at Podcenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.